Welcome back to the A-Level Politics Show, and today we will return to devolution. I have a few podcasts on this issue. Episode 35 deals with devolution and democracy. Episode 60 addresses the case for further devolution in England. Much of the content from those two podcasts can be applied to the question I will be tackling today, and that question is, evaluate the view that devolution has benefited all four nations of the UK, including Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England. My previous episodes dealt with devolution on an argument-by-argument basis, or theme-by-theme. These included things like the extent of local decision-making, the fairness of the electoral systems, and the impact on representative and liberal democracy. I will incorporate some of the themes into this podcast, but ultimately, if you are asked a question about specific devolved bodies, I would address the question by taking each devolved body in turn. So we will tour around the UK and consider how devolution has worked in each place. And we'll start with Scotland. Now, let's focus on the successes. The Scottish Parliament was created in 1999 after an overwhelming majority of Scots voted in favour of it in a referendum in 1997. Arguably, it brings power closer to the people of Scotland, and further so by multiple Scotland Acts over time, giving it more power. The Scotland Act 2016, for example, gave the Scottish Parliament power over disability living allowances and personal independence payments. This has allowed the Scottish Government to introduce different welfare regimes that suit the needs of the Scottish people. It has significant tax-raising powers, such as over local property taxes, stamp duty, landfill taxes, air passenger duty, and it can keep half of the VAT raised in Scotland, along with powers to vary income tax to that which is set in England. This gives the Scottish Parliament a significant revenue base with which to address the needs of the Scottish electorate. The Scottish Parliament, Welsh Assembly too, and the Greater London Authority uses the additional member system electoral system. This keeps the constituency link but tops up the seat share of parties whose vote is not concentrated. Now, this lessens the winner's bonus that we see in first past the post and therefore avoids too much executive dominance, because it avoids this winner's bonus that first past the post often produces. For example, the SNP in Scotland has to work in coalition with the Green Party. This provides, therefore, greater opportunities for participation in elections. We've seen Labour run Scotland. We've seen the Lib Dems help Labour run Scotland. We've seen Scotland govern as a majority, as a minority, and now as a coalition government. We've also seen opportunities for participation due to the Scottish Parliament and its place in the Union. So the independence referendum in 2014, which stemmed from the SNP's victory in the Scottish parliamentary elections a couple of years earlier, had an 85% turnout. In addition, we could argue that Scottish voters have seen an extension of their rights, especially in relation to access to services, but also when it comes to extending liberal democracy. 16 and 17 year olds in Scotland and Wales have the right to vote in regional and local elections and in referendums too. The Scottish Parliament also led the way in protecting transgender rights, becoming the first part of the UK to extend hate crime laws to cover transphobic hate crime in 2009. It also is looking at ways to ease the process of transition for the trans community. However, this is where some of the problems have come up, and this is where we're going to be looking at the failures of devolution in Scotland. We have reserved powers in the UK devolution settlement, and that means that Parliament in Westminster still decides upon the most important issues, defence, most taxes and so on. Now, the Gender Recognition Act that Scotland recently passed, the Scottish Parliament recently passed, that was blocked by the UK Parliament in Westminster by invoking Section 35 of the Scotland Act, which allows the UK Parliament to prevent a law from taking effect elsewhere if it feels these reserved matters will be affected by it. In this case, the UK government claims that the Equalities Act, a national law, would be compromised by the Gender Recognition Act, a Scottish law. This points then to regional tension between England and Scotland, and that has grown immensely, not least because of flashpoints over different policies such as the ones I've just described, but also because of Brexit and then how the two countries adopted different strategies related to COVID. Uneven policy responses have not necessarily dampened calls for independence north of the border, the very thing that devolution was designed to stop. The UK Supreme Court has blocked a call from the Scottish Government to hold a second independence referendum, again citing reserve powers of Westminster. This case demonstrates to the SNP the weakness of the devolved settlement and to others the inbuilt tension that devolution appears to have ushered in, whether to have an independence referendum, whether the Scottish Parliament has a right to have a say on Brexit, which the Supreme Court also denied them, whether Scotland could introduce new rights for transgender people, but whether that is allowable, and so on. And when we look at the electoral system as well, we see that AMS has produced either minority governments or coalition, sometimes majority, but generally minority governments and coalition, which results in questionable mandates and a limited legitimacy. The Scottish Government claims a mandate to hold a second independence referendum after the SNP won most seats to the Holyrood election in 2021, and then worked with the pro-independence Greens and coalition to allow them a parliamentary majority after that parliamentary election in 2021. Yet this mandate has not been recognised by Westminster. So because of AMS, you tend not to get blockbuster majorities, which then leads to questionable legitimacy and a lack of recognition south of the border. So when I think of one word to describe Scottish devolution, I often think of this one: tension. Now, tension, of course, could be a good or a bad thing. Maybe devolution is about resolving disputes and that inevitably leads to tension. But it could be a bad thing too, because it may well be that we see increased areas or an increase in areas where the Scottish Government wants to do one thing and the UK Government wants to do another. And then we get that build-up of resentment on either side of the border. I'm going to turn to Wales now. The Welsh Assembly, as it was then called, was established around the same time as the Scottish Parliament and began life with minimal powers. Yet, like Scotland, Wales has also gained a number of powers over certain policies over time in the Wales Act, allowing it to take more decisions at local level. It is now fully in charge, for example, of the Welsh NHS and also of Welsh education. Now, in terms of the former, this has allowed Wales to produce COVID measures that were far more readily accepted and popular in Wales than similar measures brought in for England. Hence, Labour, which dominated the Welsh Parliament, and its strong showing in the Welsh parliamentary elections in 2021. The Senedd, as it's now called, has been at the forefront of celebrating and promoting Welsh culture and language. All children in Wales are now being taught to be bilingual in both Welsh and English. The Welsh people have gradually come to accept devolution and support its legitimacy, having voted in a referendum to extend devolved powers still further and to allow the Welsh Assembly to be called a Welsh Parliament, which in Welsh is Senedd. And I think that is S-E-N-E-D-D, but I could be wrong, but it's spelt Senedd, but it's pronounced Senedd. So I sound really clever, don't I? But I'm not really. Okay, so there are some problems, though, with the devolution settlement in Wales. It's not in charge of everything it wants. The UK government refused to hand over policing and justice, for example. Participation, a vital component for democracy, has not increased, particularly in Welsh Senedd elections. The Welsh parliamentary election turnout in 2021 was just 47%. This may also be reflective of a Welsh Parliament that started life with far less legitimacy than the Scottish Parliament. Barely half of the Welsh electorate voted in favour of devolution when it was first introduced by the Blair government. So one word to describe Welsh devolution: evolving, I would say. Evolving. Evolving. Now to Northern Ireland. The Northern Irish Assembly was formed after the Good Friday Agreement in 1998. The main goal of devolution in the province was to reduce sectarian violence between Protestants and Catholics and ushering power sharing. It introduced the concept of a Northern Irish Assembly with an electoral system and with mechanisms such as petitions of concerns to cement this. Turnout to the devolved body elections have been higher than in other devolved regions and nations. I think partly because both sides of the sectarian divide recognise the significance, the importance of devolution in bringing about peace, of power sharing. Now, the STV, the single transferable vote electoral system used in Northern Ireland, which produces multi-member constituencies, is vital to ensure that power sharing because it means that both sides of the sectarian divide are represented. And DUP and Sinn Féin, once the most intransigent groups in Northern Ireland, have then gone on to form coalitions together with this proportional electoral system. There is hope that despite the tensions, most notably over Brexit, more on that in a minute, that Northern Ireland's power sharing arrangements can last, especially now the Windsor Agreement signed in February 2023 may have found solutions to address some of the tensions to do with the Northern Ireland Protocol that was signed after Brexit. It is perhaps a signal that devolution is working because violence has been replaced by diplomacy. The devolved assembly was also put in charge of policing, reform of which is a vital component in sustaining trust amongst the nationalist community that always felt that the precursor to the current police force, the police service of Northern Ireland, it was called the RUC or the Royal Ulster Constabulary, was an arm of the British state. So this new PSNI has dramatically improved relations with that side of the sectarian divide. And the Northern Ireland Assembly has been instrumental in reforming police in that province and perhaps then producing a much better chance of peace in the long term. But of course, we are not without problems. It's Northern Ireland, folks. The coalitions in Northern Ireland have broken down on numerous occasions, resulting in the UK government having to impose a budget. This included the period between 2017 to 2020 over the Cash for Ash scandal concerning a renewable energy scheme that went badly wrong to the tune of £500 million. Brexit put further strain on the province, just like in Scotland, and further paralysed the devolved institutions. Northern Ireland, as part of the Northern Ireland Protocol that was agreed with the EU and Boris Johnson, remained in the EU single market to avoid a hard border with the Republic of Ireland. Yet the DUP abhorred the idea that as part of the UK, Northern Ireland had a separate trading arrangement to that of the mainland. Now, this is something that the Windsor Agreement with Sunak and Ursula von der Leyen have kind of agreed to alter. And so maybe there will be hope that the Assembly can get back up and running again. One word to describe Northern Ireland devolution: painstaking. Let's come to England now. Devolution has been introduced through city mayors in the main. There have been some notable successes of where these mayors have responded to the concerns of residents far better than perhaps central government has. Andy Burnham, Mayor of Manchester, opposed the tier system of COVID lockdowns, raising the issue of business sustainability. In doing so, he shone a spotlight on the UK government's COVID policy. Devolved bodies can also react to local problems and test out new ideas. The congestion charge is a solution to London's transport problems and is a revenue raising scheme for improved buses and so on. So too is Sadiq Khan's ultra low emission zone to prevent pollution. Devolution has been introduced by consent. There just isn't the same demand for it in England as fewer areas enjoy such distinct regional or national identities. Perhaps this is why voters in the Northeast rejected having an assembly in 2004. That's not necessarily a failure. That just demonstrates that devolution in England has been moved along much more slowly than in other areas because it needs consent. And where there is consent, these devolved bodies are working quite well. Maybe a piecemeal approach is the right one for a country like England, where most voters say they would prefer to be governed from Westminster. But there are a number of problems with this. And the main one being is that we have asymmetrical devolution. And that means that local decision making over important policies is not consistent throughout the country. There has been too little devolution to the English regions. The metro mayors, which have been the main way of bringing about limited devolution, have very small budgets. 83% of local council budgets still come with strings attached from central government. We are one of the most centralised nations in the world. And really, these mayors that are there, like the London mayor, they have powers over transport, a bit of housing. But let's compare that with the New York mayor in America, where they control education. Turnout for mayor elections is subsequently very low. Maybe people just don't see it as a very important post. The London mayoral turnout was just 42% in 2021, down 4% from the previous mayoral election. Therefore, they lack legitimacy for policy initiatives. I spoke about the ultra low emission zone, the ULEZ, but that's proven highly controversial for the cost it imposes upon drivers of older vehicles, especially self-employed people too. A number of areas also have voted to scrap having mayors, like Bristol. The Elections Act 2022 that was passed by the Westminster government has replaced the supplementary vote electoral system with first past the post for future mayoral elections, which could prove inappropriate for cities with diverse populations, as it may not encourage candidates, as SV does, to reach across party divides and win second preference votes. You don't have second preference votes in first past the post. Most mayors are therefore likely to be elected on a minority of the vote, further weakening the legitimacy of those elected leaders, those elected mayors. And then we come to the West Lothian question, which still remains. This is the issue of what to do with non-English MPs who can vote on English-only matters in the Westminster Parliament, as they did on the Sunday Trading Bill in 2016. Attempts to address this question, such as English votes for English laws, have been scrapped. And that, among other things, leads to English resentment. There is a feeling that English taxpayers are paying for Welsh and Scottish public services that are not available in England. The Barnett formula, which allocates more spending per head to Scotland and Welsh residents than English residents, has done little to quell such resentment. So one word to describe devolution in England: limited. Therefore, we can see that there are strengths and weaknesses of devolution, and that they are specific to the nation concerned and can largely be analysed through looking at different political perspectives. For example, the SNP might argue that devolution has not worked because Scotland is not yet independent, while a Conservative in Westminster might argue that devolution also hasn't worked, but because it hasn't prevented Scottish nationalism. So two criticisms, but from completely different perspectives. My tuppence worth is that the Northern Ireland peace deal with the Good Friday Agreement and the Northern Irish Assembly cannot be achieved or sustained without devolution. Meanwhile, rule from Westminster simply isn't efficient or responsive enough to address the concerns of Welsh and Scottish voters. So you need devolution in Wales and Scotland as well. The big issue is England and the unevenness of the entire project. Now, Labour has called for greater English devolution, but the proposals made seem pretty complicated and messy. Maybe neatness just isn't a British thing. But I'll tell you what is neat. The A-Level Politics Show +++. For just £1.99 a month, you can get access to the entire back catalogue of the A-Level Politics Show and receive two bonus episodes per month. If you really, really like the show, then do leave a nice review wherever you download and stream. And if you don't, well, then don't. Deets about my revision book are in the show notes too, but that's enough of the hard sell, because this show sells itself. That's terrible, I admit, that's terrible. Better sign off whilst I'm still winning. Until the next time, ta-da, folks.